Blog Talk Radio.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good afternoon. You are listening to Voices for Justice here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and today we speak with authors Ann Garrett and Nancy Goodell out of Los Angeles. Our guests will be taking your calls. The lines are now open. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click chat to join the conversation. Ann Garrett was born in Salt Lake City, Utah. At the age of 14, she began to work with children who were emotionally disturbed. She has never stopped since. Ann has attended the University of Utah, where she received her Bachelor of Science degree in Sociology and Social Work. During her junior year in college, she lived in Switzerland and traveled throughout Europe. For over 30 years, Ann has lived in the Los Angeles area, working in a residential treatment center and therapeutic school for severely emotionally disturbed children who were physically and sexually abused. She currently is the children's librarian, runs a literacy program, and in addition, is a special education substitute teacher. Nancy Goodell has worked with Frazzled Folks as a special education teacher, dance movement therapist, school director, mother, and she is also a grandmother. Her life's work supports growth, producing interactions between adults and children. Nancy grew up in Nebraska and has lived on both coasts. Currently, she and her husband live and work in Southern California. And we welcome both the ladies to Voices for Justice. Welcome, girls.
Hi, Michelle.
Welcome. Before we begin, I'd like to also say that the song that you heard in the intro, and we'll finish it in entirety at the end of the show, is called Missing Child. It's by a teenager by the name of Emil, E-M-I-L, and I highly suggest that you Google him and look at his and listen to his music. He's a wonderful young man. So the title, it says it all, TLC for Frazzled Kids, Helping Grown-Ups Help Kids. How did this title come to be, Ann and Nancy?
Well, this title came about a long, long time ago. For me, it was the early 60s, and I was a young special education teacher. And I found myself in a classroom. I thought I was going to be working with children with learning disabilities. What turned out was I had a classroom full of children who had suffered a lot of trauma, abuse, neglect, a lot of tragedies in their young lives. So they had lots and lots of emotional and behavioral issues. They were frazzled, and I was frazzled because I was not equipped to work with children who had that many emotional issues and that many behavioral challenges, and certainly they didn't want to be in the classroom. So at that young age, I learned about frazzled firsthand and had to figure out a way to deal with my own frazzledness and to then create a classroom that was safe and productive for these little kids. How about you, Anne?
The second part of the title, Helping Grown-Ups Help Kids, is when we were designing the book, we realized that the book looks very playful. We've tried to make the book different from other books in that there's a lot of books out there for parents and or teachers, and they're thick and just overwhelming. And you think, how can I ever get through this? I'm dealing with so much as it is. Our book is designed to be an easy read. It's written to be an easy read, and it looks playful. We have an illustrator, a very famous illustrator by the name of Gaspar Vaccaro, who is 81 years young, as we say, and has artist who created some beautiful line drawings for us. He also did many things like the Flintstones. Mr. Magoo, you might know him from a movie called Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast. Very, very famous illustrator. And so he read the book several times and came up with drawings that would support the text. But we tried to design the book to make it a quick and easy read. Knowing that, our book does look playful. It does look brightly colored. We decided we needed a subtitle to let people know this is not a book for kids. This is a book for helping grown-ups help kids. And so the book's design was to be, like I said, a quick read, very accessible, down-to-earth, practical, innovative, and to help people just be able to just pick it up, grab it, read a quick chapter, and go, okay, I know what to do now.
It definitely is a quick read and a friendly read, if you will. It is under 100 pages.
Well, it's 120 to be precise.
Right, right.
Not quite under,
a little bit over, but the book itself is very friendly for whether you're a child or a teenager or a parent. Looking at the book and having Gasper on it and Nancy and yourself, how did all of you come to meet and work on this project together?
Well, Nancy and I have been friends, and Nancy and I have worked as colleagues. Nancy was the principal of the therapeutic school while I was on the crisis team. And so we've known each other and worked together for many, many years, besides being friends. Unfortunately, our first illustrator was by the name of Annie Whitson, and Annie was a dear friend and colleague also. She passed away this last year, and so we needed to find someone else who could illustrate the book and could kind of see our vision, and it just happened that a coworker of ours happened to have this very famous, unbeknownst to us, this very famous illustrator father. She was showing me a scrapbook she was doing for him, and there was a little line drawing in, and I stopped her. I said, "Oh, my gosh, who did that? Who did that?" And she went, "Oh, my dad did that." I said, "What does your dad do?" And this was for his 80th birthday, and then we came to find out that Gasper, you know, was who Gasper is as an artist, a very, very talented, incredible
famous
artist.
One.
So we arranged a meeting and pleaded with him and said, you know, you've got to take this project on. And once he read the manuscript, and that was our selling point. Once he read the manuscript, because he's all about helping kids, all about children, he was on board with us.
So you mentioned in an earlier interview it took about 2 years to complete. What kind of research went into this particular book, and did you both get anything out of the research and learn something new that you weren't aware of in your profession?
Well, I would say the research that we did was purely 100% hands-on. Both of us have been trained in education and in psychology, so we had the theoretical base behind us. But each of us has worked with children of all backgrounds and a variety of emotional and behavioral needs for together, I would say, almost 70 years total.
Yes, combined 75 years.
So we have been, you might say, in the school of hard knocks, in that initially it was very, very challenging, at least for me, I'll speak for myself, very challenging for me to work as a teacher in a classroom with children who were very out of control. And so I had to, based on my best knowledge coming from training, figure out ways, adapt the ways that I had learned to really address the needs of children. And to be honest, the most significant piece of what I learned over the years was that I needed to calm myself first, that I needed to operate from a place of calm and clarity before I could attempt to do anything with children. Because if I was frazzled, the kids picked up my energy and I was no good to them. So I learned, as we talk a lot in the book, that the most important thing in this methodology is that the grown-ups, the adults in charge, need to find ways to calm and focus themselves first.
Yeah, we have a whole chapter on creating an environment, and one of the points of creating a successful or safe environment is how the adult is feeling when they approach the child. If you go at the child real aggressively or hostily, the environment you were creating is an environment of fear or hostility. Whereas if you can just take a step back and use your own calming techniques, whatever they are, and go and approach the child in just a neutral, calm, serene way, with open body language, with non-threatening body language, then you're going to create a safer environment and you can start to de-escalate the situation. And as Nancy said, this has come from many, many years. We've used this particular theory has been tried and true for over 20 years I've been doing this, and Nancy longer. And so this we know works because I do it every day at work, and it works. I do it in my personal life. It works. This is not something that just works with children. It works with adults and teenagers also. We've written it up to start with children. Because from my personal standpoint is I just really feel that children in America are in trouble. I think that our children are very stressed out, to use another word. I think our children are frazzled for very different reasons. Some is just they're in poverty and they're despondent about when the next meal is going to come. You know, they see what their parents are going through, trying to pay the bills, just trying to survive in the economy right now. There's that kind of frazzled and stressed. There's the stress of peer groups and what's going on in the peer culture moving so fast and the problems with bullying that are going on in the schools right now. I mean, that causes tremendous stress and frazzledness with children. You know, and then, you know, this thing in our country where we have to excel. There's kids on the other side of the spectrum, you know, who may have plenty of money and their family is fine financially, but their performance level, they're expected to just be like superhuman and, you know, always have straight A's and be in band, be in choir, be, you know, in sports, be the best. And that, too, causes frazzled behavior.
For our listeners, we are speaking with authors Nancy Goodell and Ann Garrett. They just released their new book, TLC for Frazzled Kids, Helping Grown-Ups Help Kids. If you'd like to ask them a question, feel free and call us at 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. TLC for Frazzled Kids, according to your press release and all, is a practical step-by-step guide for working with children who are experiencing trauma, injury, sickness, or ongoing challenges of living in this complex world, as you were just saying, Anne. There is so much going on with divorce, so much argument, and I know on a previous interview I asked this question, especially to you, Nancy. How do you handle it when you've got a child that is in a destructive home or a home that the environment gets them frazzled? The parents are arguing all the time. Parents are not home all the time. They're either working or neglecting their child. And then the child is sent off to an other grandparent or an aunt, and their attitude is different. How do you handle that, you know, to set those boundaries?
Okay, first of all, I think it's important to note that children are very capable of understanding the domains that they're in, and they, when given clear expectations, and clear limits are able to adjust their behavior according to the environment that they're in. So let's say, for example, that a child from the background that you're describing is coming into a classroom. The importance of having clarity about what the behavior expectations are is extremely important, but even with that happening, kids will lose it. And the process that we have learned to use with children goes something like this. When a child becomes upset, and let's say a child is having trouble with a math problem and throws the book down on the floor and wants to stomp out of the room, which is something I dealt with on a daily basis, the first thing that I would do would be to acknowledge the child in quite a clear but firm and calm voice. I can see that you are very upset. In other words, acknowledging that the behavior is there for a reason and opening up the conversation, hopefully, to get to what the underlying concern is. Once the child feels heard and seen, very often the dilemma calms. The child feels heard and feels like there's an opening for a conversation. Quickly after acknowledging the child and that something is certainly upsetting him or her, comes a clear limit, and it goes something like this. Even though you are upset, even though you do not want to do that math problem, you still need to keep yourself safe. You may not throw the book on the floor. I'm here to help you, so that there is an acknowledgement but also a clear limit. Then what follows is a problem-solving process that helps the child to solve the problem. And usually what we have to do at that stage is to teach the child how to calm themselves so that they're able to think clearly and do problem-solving. And, of course, all of these things that I'm talking about need to be practiced ahead of time because it's difficult to implement and learn on the spot.
Did that answer your question, Michelle?
It did. And Anne, did you want to weigh in a little bit?
Well, I do. With kids in different domains, and, you know, like a lot of times the children in the residential unit will really, really misbehave and then be over there, and then they come to school, and that same child is like the perfect student. And it's because the teacher has the class really well structured. It's very clear, the expectations of the class, and they feel safe and secure, and they know what the limits are. And so they're able to change into that behavior. So like with the little girl you were talking about, she could come from a very, very dysfunctional kind of yelling situation, but come to a grandma's house and know that this is a real safe place. And I can relax here. I can be safe here. I can talk about my feelings here. And it might help that same child as if there's a place set up for her to go, like when the parents are arguing in her own home or in her bedroom, or a cozy place there where she feels safe, so that when those episodes, those explosive episodes are happening with the adults, that the child knows, well, I'm going to go in my room and maybe sit in my closet or crawl under my bed. I've seen kids do that, or get under my covers or sit in my beanbag chair, you know, and I'm going to hold my stuffies. And I'm going to put my headset on, and I'm not going to listen to those words. I'm going to listen to some music instead. So or I'm going to read a book. I'm going to tune them out, and I'm going to go do this calming activity. So that might help that little girl.
Mm-hmm. I think what Anne...
You also mentioned practicing during calm times. I think a lot of us, especially, you know, when you're in a public place, like a store, for instance, you may see a child acting out. Instead of acknowledging why the child is acting out or what the issue is, I've seen parents just whether they're embarrassed or mad or what have you, taking it out on the child. You mentioned, you know, practicing during quiet times or calming times in order to identify. How does one do that when they're in public places, like a classroom setting?
Well, again, it would be helpful if we'd done role-playing times and practiced that so that when the situation occurred, we would have skills that were in place. But there's a couple of other things that one can do, and this is difficult because, as we said before, what happens is that we as adults get agitated and we kind of lose our cool. And so for the adult to calm themselves first is important. But here are some tips. One is to put, when a child is misbehaving in a store, the adult can put a hand very gently on the child's shoulder. Very gentle touch can be soothing and can also support what we call body boundaries. Talking calmly, quiet voice, calm voice, with slow speech. Speech slowed down so the child really can hear the words. Few words, not a lot of words, can also help the situation.
The other thing is, I think we've all seen the child acting out in the grocery store and the embarrassed parent. I think when we see the embarrassed parent, we don't need to make it worse by looking at the child or giving the parent that look. You know, that look like,
right,
can't you get your child under control? Because if they could, they would. And I tend to see the situation even getting worse when I come upon these situations because the onlookers, you know, are interacting in a way that's embarrassing the parent even more. And that isn't helping the child, and it certainly isn't helping the situation. So a little planned ignoring by the other people in the store could be a real benefit, to just go on your merry way and don't give that child any audience. That's something we all can do for one another, is just because it does happen. And children sometimes use that as a way to manipulate to get candy or crackers or whatever the thing of the week
right.
is, the cereal they want. And they're usually melting down because the mom or dad has said, no, you know, we're going to go get asparagus. And so that is usually the crux of what's going on. So if we as just kind of as adults can just ignore that and not shoot those looks to either the child or the kid or the parent, I think everyone will just do a little bit better. And
I agree with you on that philosophy, because when you are looking at the parent, and obviously the look is different than a friendly look, the child then perceives it that, oh, it's okay to do that as adults. And I think that when children grow up, then that's why we're in the kind of problems we are in society today. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Right.
I would agree.
And there's another thing I think that we need to keep in mind. Our environment is so stimulating, overwhelmingly stimulating to kids. Just imagine the stimulation in a grocery store, for example. The things that we don't wish to buy for them are right at their eye level. There are sounds, the fluorescent lights, all of that going on reduces the child's ability to stay centered, calm, and focused. And I think we as adults need to be aware of the amount of stimulation we allow into their daily lives minute by minute. It is a lot.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. And a lot of negative energy at that, with the types of games that you have and the types of things on the internet and then whatever they're going through at school, and then bullying. And then if they come home, you know, many children, somebody posted, you know, that they're not a parent, but they were a frazzled child. I don't really know anybody that was never frazzled in their lifetime. I mean, you can paint the picture of a perfect upbringing and everything else, but in reality, I believe that everybody in life has been overwhelmed and frazzled at some point in their life, and it's how we handle that.
Exactly. One of our phrases is all children become frazzled sometime. You know, whether they're just tired and have a meltdown. We just had this at our school the other day. Is this little boy, obviously, one of our youngest ones, did not get a good night's sleep. And he just was out of sorts. And the more he tantrumed and kicked and spit and yelled and cursed, the more we knew the intervention was a nap. I mean, it was just basic human biology. So the next day when he came with a bad case of bedhead, we were all thrilled because we knew, he's gotten a good night's sleep. And, of course, he had a good day. So, I mean, some of it is just basic, blatant, common sense, you know. Children need...
Nancy was mentioning on a previous show that when you're frazzled, Nancy, and you've got the grandkids over, what have you, something that calms you down is going to your back patio where there's an olive tree and picking up the black olives. Are there any other kinds of tricks of the trade that calms authors when you're frazzled? Especially, I know, Anne, you work with children all day too. So what else do you all do to calm yourselves before you can help others?
Well, I love to take a walk, and Anne has a wonderful story about her walks that she takes at the end of her day with her pup. Do you want to tell that story,
sure.
Anne?
Sure. One of the ways that people ask me how long I've been doing this work, and I've done this work with kids for over 31 years, and one of the ways that I do not burn out is that after my day at work, I go home and I leash up my dog and we go for a nice mile walk, which she's thrilled about and I'm thrilled about too. And it's just like the day melts away and I can transition into my normal life. From that point on, I don't think about work. I know the children I work with are in good hands and I can continue on. And,
but you also do the sit on the ground meditation.
Oh, and then I have something which I fondly call just do meditation time. And when it's warmer down in Southern California, we get many of these days where I will literally sit on the grass with my dog, and we will just sit there for a good 15, 20 minutes and just let my mind clear and relax on that nice, you know, grass in the park. And it just is very literally grounding. And that's one of the ways that, especially during very stressful periods of time, that I choose to just nurture myself is to take that 15, 20 minutes, have a nice little walk, and then sit on the ground itself, literally on the ground, in the grass, and just become virtually grounded.
And
grounded.
One of the suggestions that we hear a lot, or one of the strategies that we hear a lot, and I certainly see this with my grandchildren, that a warm bath and water play in the bathtub is very soothing and very calming for children and certainly for grown-ups as well. And you have some good
Definitely. I know that works for my nieces, and sometimes it's hard to get them out of the bathtub. So let's talk
that
a little bit
true.
About Chapter 9, where you talk about behavior management guidelines, acknowledging the underlying feeling and need. And I know we touched on that a little bit about when a child is crying in a store, and chances are it's because they couldn't have what they wanted at that time. But when is a good time to sit down and understand the child before it escalates too much, where then the parent loses control, which I don't want to throw into this mix, but, you know, in today's news, you turn on the news and you hear of a lot of parents, young and old, that just could not take their children anymore, and they were so frazzled that they did harm to their children. this book is trying to prevent that. So how do you identify and work with that?
I'm not sure I'm understanding your question. Would you say the question again?
Well, I think in life, whether you're an adult or a child or, you know, you're a teacher teaching children,
right,
where, you know, when somebody's acting out, we tend to react,
correct,
to it. Whereas in your book, I believe it's chapter 9, where you say to identify the issue,
mm-hmm,
so that you're able to understand what the person is going through in order to make it better.
Yes.
And I'm using maybe in a bad analogy, but in today's world, you turn on the news, local or CNN or anything, you hear about parents that cannot take their frazzled child anymore and their behavior and do harm to that child. And that's happening almost on a daily basis now around this country. How do we handle that and capture it before it gets to that point?
Well, one of the things, Michelle, and this has been happening kind of through our website since the NCAT conference. We've been receiving emails and kind of cries for help. One of the things I think is really good is to know when you're in over your head, when you are getting to the point of where you might commit child abuse. You just are just so exhausted and worn out inside from a child, and to be able to reach out. There, in different communities, there's a phone number. Down in the Los Angeles area, it is 211, which you can call and you can ask for resources in your community. And you can have, it's not abandoning child, but you can have a child placed on a temporary respite time, you know, so that you can regroup. That's sort of preventative, proactive thing can very much help a family. Or you can bring a person in right now. There is in-home services. There's a big thrust in our country to keep the family unit together and to support the family, which I think is fantastic. And the worker will kind of come in and model some techniques and we'll look at the situation and try and help the family work together to get that behavior under control. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. That's an old saying, but it's true. If you could be proactive, if you know that at 6 o'clock Johnny's going to fall apart every day, you might want to look at what happens before 6 o'clock. Why is he falling apart? And then realize maybe he just needs a snack at 5:15. And it's better to have his dinner a little spoiled than to have that tantrum. I mean, there are some things that are that simple, and then there's other things that are much, much more complex. But I think it's situation by situation, and reaching out to, and not feeling shameful about asking for help. I think people and parents and teachers have got to get, people working with children have got to get past that stigma that if I ask for help, there's something wrong with me, that I can't handle it, you know? No. There's a huge uprise in statistics of children with high-functioning autism and Asperger's, which is very, very new in our society. And that, coupled with a little ADHD, is a very, very difficult thing to at first deal with. And parents are just perplexed, as if a lot of professionals are. And so if they can start to reach out to the people who know, or the professionals who know, and are starting to get a handle on this and to get the support into the family system before it goes too far, you know, and too much frustration builds up and things escalate up to a point of where, you know, people are just so exhausted or so worn out that they become violent toward their children. I think that's a big key to it, is to just really kind of know that stress level and to know that it's okay to ask for help. And I just want to keep
it's amazing that our society tends to frown upon prevention strategies and funding, And then when the problem escalates, then it's like there are no services to help in that situation. And I wanted to add, there's somebody in the chat room that found the show just surfing the web, and she's actually from Canada, and she's the Canada Regional Director for Dream Catchers for Abused Children. And so she's saying it's great information for parents who may be struggling, and she's going to look up your website, which, again, for our listeners, is www.frazzledkids.com. And check out Dream Catchers for Abused Children. They're a nonprofit organization in the United States and Canada. It is a vicious cycle, but I believe that prevention is everything. You know, I'm a big advocate for prevention methods, no matter what issue you're talking about. So dive a little bit for our listeners into this book about how this book, if used properly and provided properly to teachers and daycare workers and counselors and therapists and parents, if they're utilizing this book and bringing it into that arena, that they're able to utilize this, and we could be preventing a lot of frazzled kids from getting lost in the system.
Okay.
Either one of you?
Yes. The book is a tool. Certainly it is a tool and provides practical step-by-step strategies. But the other thing that I think is important about the book, and something that Ann and I are committed to, is that it opens up the conversation. It opens up the conversation and fully acknowledges that loving and caring for our children is indeed a challenge, and that we, all of us, each of us, needs support. One of the things that we will be doing and are currently doing, and there are many folks doing this in the Pasadena community, are support groups for parents, discussion groups where people talk about the issues and the concerns that they are having. It happens at the community college level. It happens in churches. It happens in informal discussion groups where parents are talking about the issues and the concerns that they have. And Ann and I are committed certainly to the methodology that we use, but we're committed to supporting people finding their own healthy, strong, effective, caring, loving ways of working with the kids in their lives. Everyone has a unique style, and every style has an effective way of working with children. So we are very supportive of helping people to find a way that works with the kids that they live with and work with and care for.
Ann?
And the other thing is something I've just, you know, for people who in this great technological world, but there's a site called Meetup, and you just put in parenting classes or parents, and there's groups popping up in areas all over the United States, and it shows you where these groups of people are that meet and discuss certain issues. So if you have a certain issue with your child, like let's say it is high-functioning autism, you know, you'd put that into the Meetup group, and they would tell you where the group is that's meeting on that subject. So I'm really glad to see that groups are people in the United States are banding together to help one another and to support one another in all sorts of different interests and all sorts of different ways pertaining to children, especially. I use a methodology in the book for over 20 years. It is effective, and it does work, and it is a simple, once you know the strategies, it is very, very applicable to your everyday life, not only with your children, it works with teenagers, it works with other adults, because it is a common sense approach, and it is a loving and supportive approach. And So I would encourage people, our goal is a book in every household so that they're thumbed up and read and underlined and discussed, and that, you know, our site gets lots of traffic, and we do encourage people to contact us with questions, and we will give them the best advice and get them to the best people possible. And, you know, that's what our mission is to do. We have this, the book came as a response to what can we do to help our kids in our country. What, even though Nancy and I are both in the field and we're helping children every day and families every day on a one-to-one, or, you know, like I'm working with 60 kids right now, but, you know, it isn't enough. It isn't enough. Our children are virtually, this generation is just so frazzled, to use our own words, and so in need of support and what's happening in the country. And the book is our response. And that's this book's just our first response, and we were going to respond more and more and more. And so that is the mission of the book, is to get this into the hands of teachers and clinicians and parents and start learning some techniques that support safety and success for their children and uphold them with dignity and love and respect.
For our listeners just joining us, we're speaking with Ann Garrett and Nancy Goodell, authors out of the Los Angeles area, who just published their new book, TLC, for Frazzled Kids, Helping Grown-Ups Help Kids. They are in the Los Angeles area. Look them up, www.frazzledkids.com. They are available, from what they tell me, for speaking engagements throughout the country, especially in the Los Angeles area, and they are available for interviews and to come to speak to your classroom. So please look them up and give them a call if you'd like to ask a question today. We have about 20 minutes left. Please call 347-838-8622, and they'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. TLC, for Frazzled Kids, is a behavior management system that builds a foundation for problem-solving, coping strategies, and adult life skills. We've touched on how to acknowledge the underlying feeling or need, setting a clear limit to ensure safety and success, and teaching a new way one step at a time, reinforcing the success and applying the logic and natural consequences. Let's talk about the encouraging and reinforcing the honesty and success of this approach and logic strategy.
Well,
either one of you?
Logic, natural and logical consequences. And natural and logical consequences are can be just wonderful. For example, you know, if a child tears up a book, we have this, you know, life stops. After you've gone through this process, life stops until the book is repaired, you know. And so many times I see this, a child will destroy something, and then it's immediately replaced by the parent. You know, oh, you broke that toy, well, I'll get you another one. No. The logical consequence is you purposely broke that toy. Now, if you want another one, you'll have to earn it through your own allowance, or you know, you just don't have it anymore. And it's those kind of things, the logic behind the consequence or the natural consequence of the situation. Nance, would you like to speak on that for a second?
I think that often as adults we can't bear the pain of watching children face the consequences of their choices, so often we try to protect them. And when we do that, we really do lose a learning opportunity to help the child to understand the consequences of their behavior. It's tough. It's tough at times, but meaningful consequences can really promote growth for kids.
Now, this isn't
so
the same, Michelle.
When you say growth for kids,
the,
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ann.
That you don't stop that. I'm not saying that kind of consequence, not where any danger is involved. But we're talking about material things or, you know, like we give an example. You know, if the boy leaves his football equipment out in the rain and you've asked him to pick it up and his equipment's out in the rain, well, guess what? You're going to have soggy pads now and you have to face your coach. And, yeah, your equipment might not be up to par through the football season, but that's just one of those things that happens. A friend of mine told me of an example of they had this big 13th birthday party. They were twins, and they had this huge birthday party planned, and all the kids were coming. And they had done some misbehavior. They snuck out the night before to go meet some friends. And the parents called up everyone and canceled the birthday party, the kids' 13th birthday party that they had been planning for months. It was the logical consequence to the misbehavior. And I said, you know, well, how did that affect you? And their response was, it's the best thing my parents could have done. And this is coming from adults looking back on their childhood. So that's, again, you know, you misbehave before your birthday party, your birthday party's canceled. Yes, it was a painful thing to do. I think it probably affected the parents worse than the kids, but it really, really set them on a good course.
Do you think that in today's society that teachers have the ability to utilize this book to an approach with children who are frazzled because of an unhealthy home life with their parents, and that there is no teaching the parents, and the parents would laugh at this book? But how would a teacher or a counselor utilize this book to help that that child before they're lost?
Well, you're talking about my story. That was exactly what I was facing as a teacher, and for years that was the situation for me, that the kids who were coming to me had trauma, neglect, abuse, all kinds of things going on in the home base. And when they came into the classroom, I needed to create an environment for them that enabled them to be safe, and they needed to learn. So all of these strategies that we talk about are things that I had to use in the school to create a safe environment for them in that setting. And I would only hope that to some extent the kids were able to benefit from what was happening in the classroom, and hopefully they were able to take some of it with them when they went home. But in reality, that's probably very optimistic.
Well, you know, for me, I had a frazzled upbringing. My mom remarried, and we were adopted by the stepfather and all of that. And for me, it was a teacher that had no children of her own, but it was like she took me under her wing. And both of you met her, actually, at the Northwest Conference Against Trafficking this past January, Rita. And today she's just like my mother, you know, 26 years later. And for me, I wouldn't be who I am today if it wasn't for her stepping in and getting me onto the right track, because I almost got lost. And so that's why I say, you know, times change. I don't know what the classroom setting is like these days, especially with the budget crunches. I mean, she was my home ec teacher. You know, I don't even know if they have home ec anymore in school. But for me, that teacher, she knew her boundaries, but it was the way she softly put that hand on my shoulder, softly geared me into leadership roles and running for office of organizations on campus. And it was that soft approach, and I always knew I had an open door to talk to somebody.
Important.
And I think when I've read, I have 8 books on my shelf to read, and your book, I've read it. So it's like when I read this book, it was like, wow, you know, this is what Rita did for me. So kudos to you, because this book is great.
Well, thank you. I do think teachers can just tremendously impact children still. Times have changed, and it's hard, but there are many, many, many dedicated teachers out there. And I know for me, it was, and I had a good upbringing, but the reason I'm in this profession is from a summer job as a young teenager and a social worker who spent time and said encouraging things, and by the name of Alan Proctor. And it affected my choices for my life's work. And what became important to me is working with children with problems. So I do think it doesn't always have to be the parent who is influencing the child. It can be a teacher. It can be a Sunday school teacher, a Boy Scout leader, a Girl Scout leader. You know, like I said, your boss. It's, I think, how the person treats the child and guides the child in positive ways. And I know there's teachers out there trying so very hard to do that. And even with the overcrowding of the classrooms, you know, there are many, many dedicated teachers out there trying to just do that very thing.
And I think that your book also can help, even though it's TLC for Frazzled Kids, I think there's so many adults that are still kid-like, or because they lost their childhood, never grew up, kind of like Michael Jackson, for instance. We hear so much about how he lost his childhood. If grown-ups, I think this book is good for grown-ups too, helping grown-ups help grown-ups.
You know that has been one of the very interesting side effects of the book, that adults read it and it touches something in them that helps them, A, to understand themselves and to be more gentle with themselves now that they are adults. You're right. This is a strategy that's important for us as adults as well.
And we've been getting that feedback quite a bit from even from people who don't have children or even work with children, that, you know, it touches their inner child. And they come to know themselves a little bit better and on a little bit deeper and kinder way. So,
and even knowing how to deal with our people that we deal with every day, I'm sure that all of us know somebody that in even professions that we're in operate in a kid-like manner. And this book teaches us how to handle those situations so that we don't fall prey and act like that child too.
Exactly.
It's a great book.
Thank you so much.
We have about 7 minutes left.
Yes.
Any last? Oh, I'm sorry, Ann. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thank you for that, and you know, I'm glad that the book touched you in that way, and it's meeting its mark.
I am too, because you're my friend. I am too, because you're my friend. You know, I have so many books after the human trafficking conference last month, and like I told Buzzy Martin the other night on his interview, there's six books on my office desk displayed, because you all sign them, and I've had to take them down and read them. And yours was the easiest read. Yours was the quickest read. And I said, I will definitely make sure I go through them all, but it's hard to get through them. I have Dawn Schiller's up there, Victor Rivers. I have two for Jane Velez. And you get through a chapter or two, and all of a sudden, in every single one of these books, yours was the only one that I was able to continue to go on with, because I saw myself in their story so much. And maybe it frightened me, maybe I backed off for some subconscious reason, but on yours, I was able to continue going on, because it's more, even though all of them are self-help, yours wasn't as scary as looking into that mirror, you know, it was almost like a mirror I wanted to look better in, if that's a bad analogy.
Wow. Well, thank you for that, Michelle.
Thank you for that feedback.
We really appreciate it.
Your book is really great.
Thank you.
We tried really hard.
Any last thoughts before we end the show tonight? I know that we've had a couple people in the chat room. Thank you for being with us. Again, the website for Ann and Nancy is frazzledkids.com. And we actually do have a caller on the line from the 831 area code. So I'm going to take their call right now. 831, caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest today?
Yes, I do. I read the quote in the beginning, growing is practicing the things we do not like to do. And I thought to myself, that applies to me, not just to kids. I'm an old guy, but I'm still trying to grow. So I think the show is just great, and I thank you for it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. How did you hear about it, sir?
Well, I got an email that told me about it and said you were talking with Nancy and Ann and about their new book, TLC for Frazzled Kids, which I just simply love and give out to many of my friends.
I love the name.
I do, too. I think it's perfect. So I just commend you, Michelle, for doing this and for the whole afternoon. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
So last thoughts, ladies.
Well,
where do you go from here?
We want to continue going on and being a resource for and NCAT and the Northwest Coalition on Human Trafficking. We want to absolutely be a resource because we believe so much in what you do also, and teaching people and training people about what's going on in this country with human trafficking. Our personal goals is to let people know that all kids get frazzled sometime. They do. And we have a tool that we would like to get into everyone's hands somehow, some way, to start and learn this methodology, which is very simple, as you know, and can really help them deal with children in a positive, loving, respectful way. So that is our goal.
And, Michelle, we would like to thank you. You truly are one of our helping heroes. And
you're fine. Thank you.
And
you got me off guard there, Nancy.
Yeah, the work that you do is profound, and very much of it is behind the scenes. But I'm telling you, we saw you in action. And the gift that you give to each of us, people in the profession and children and survivors, it's remarkable. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you, and thank you for joining us at the Northwest Conference Against Trafficking. I know that's been mentioned quite a bit. Save the date. It will take place again January 13th through the 16th, 2012, in Portland, Oregon. And we've posted some websites in the chat room. We thank Nancy and Ann for being with us and our caller that called in. And also, again, Laura Smith, that's in the chat room. Check her out at blogtalkradio.com/dreamcatchers, and we'll be looking into that too. All of us have the ability to be a voice for justice. What will you do this week to make a difference? So until we meet again, good night, and thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Anybody out there really care for a missing child? I'm a stranger in a strange place, and I don't know how I got here. I'm so far away from home. I would run, but I'm afraid to, 'cause I don't know what would happen. make it all alone. If I could get someone's attention, one kind soul to look my way, maybe you would recognize me from the pictures where they say I'm a missing child. Could be your son, could be your friend, could be your daughter. No way to know, I'll be bound to love forever. Won't somebody please, come look for me. Like I vanished in thin air. All the places they can hide me, miracles that find me. Do I really have